Morning. Today's daf in Baba Basra's Pei Zayin. We start today on the very top of Pei Vav Amud Beis with the words Tashma. The Gemara is in the middle of a discussion. Go back to Pei Vav Amud Aleph, yesterday's daf. And a statement was made. A statement was made by a number of Amoraim, and that is that when we're going to make a basic distinction between lightweight objects versus heavier objects, we are talking kinyanim. Mishnah Kedushin says that in order to facilitate a kinyan, in order to activate a kinyan, when it comes to karka, so chesef shtar chazaka. It's a fundamental rule when it comes to the acquisition of karka. But when it comes to the acquisition of movable items. So the Mishnah in Kiddushin says Mishicha. That's the Mishnah. The Mishicha means to pull on the item in your direction or to cause the item to move. There are numerous examples that are given in terms of how Mishicha is done, but it's basically to move the item from one location to another location. As we discussed already, Mishicha cannot be done in a Rishus Rabim. Mishicha cannot be done in no man's land. Mishicha can only be done in either a simta or Rishus Shel Shneim, Chatzor Shel Shneim. Okay. Anyway, that's the Mishnah. And meanwhile, the Amoraim say that is talking about items that are not typically lifted, meaning they're heavier items. So for heavier items, so you do Mashiach. But if it's a lightweight item, so then the way to do Kinyan for a lightweight movable item is Hagbah. And Hagbah to the exclusion of Mashiach, meaning Hagbah and only Hagbah. So you have to lift the item up. Rashbam says consistently throughout our parak, Hagbah is, it's the best form of Kinyan. And if you can do Hagbah, so then you have to do Hagbah. And then nothing short of Hagbah is going to activate the Kinyan. That is the Amoraim that we saw on Pei Vav Amud Aleph. A number of Amoraim said this. It depends where you lived and which yeshiva you learned in terms of who the statement is attributed to, but the Gemara said it as a basic rule. And what we did yesterday in Pei Vav Amud Aleph after we quoted that statement is we quoted a number of brises in Mishnayos that seemingly go against that rule. The Gemara still defended that rule. We're now on the very top of Pei Vav Amud Beis, Tashma. The Gemara is going to try to arrive at a conclusion based on a Mishnah. Our Mishnah says that when you sell fruit to your friend and you do Mashicha, but you didn't do Medida, but you didn't measure, so that's Kona. Now again, go back to the Rashbam that we said already a couple of times, but it's important because it's critical to the understanding of the Mishnah, meaning we agree to the price, we just simply don't know how much it actually weighs, but we agree to the price. So I know how much I'm paying per pound. And so we didn't measure it exactly, but I know once we determine how much it weighs, then I know how much I'm going to pay. So we're not going to be deliberating over the price. And I did a Mashicha, and the Mishnah says that's good, meaning that creates a kinyan, and now I acquired the item. That's what we learned back in the Mishnah. Now, we're talking about peiros, we're talking about fruit. It's fair to argue that fruit are a lightweight material. So this seems to be difficult because, again, the Amoraim said on the Amud Aleph and Pei Vav Amud Aleph that if it's something which is lightweight, which you can lift up, the only way you could be kona it is by Hagbah, not by Mashicha. And meanwhile, the Mishnah describes when it comes to fruit, Mashicha. So the Gemara's answer, a very simple answer. The Gemara says, I'm sorry, first let me read the question of the Gemara. Va'aperos b'nei Hagbah ninu, v'ktani d'kani b'mashicha. Fruit is something which is lightweight, you can pick it up easily, and yet the Mishnah says that the only way to acquire it, not the only way, the Mishnah allows acquisition to be done through Mashicha. So the Gemara says, okay, so fine, so we're talking about extraordinarily large fruit. Melons, I guess, watermelon. So the Gemara says, Yihachi and Masefa. The Gemara says, okay, but read on in the Mishnah. So you'll notice that, what is the next case in the Mishnah? The Mishnah then goes on to discuss flax. And it says when it comes to flax, in order to create a binding acquisition when it comes to flax, you have to pick it up from one place and move it to another place. So atu pishtam bishlifei ravavei. So Milo Avde. So the Gemara says, now, when it comes to flax, so presumably the distinction between flax and fruit is that the flax is large. And in order to really show that you've acquired the flax, you have to move it an entire length's worth. And so the Gemara says, so now, As the Rashbam explains the Gemara's question, if, like we originally assumed, that we were talking about small fruit, so then I totally understand the distinction that you can make between fruit versus flax. When it comes to fruit, so mishicha, meaning you just do a little bit of a pull, a little bit of a tug, and then you're kona. When it comes to flax, because flax is just different in nature, meaning it's not solid, it's stringy, just because I move one part doesn't necessarily mean the other part moves. So by flax, it's different, and therefore I got to move it an entire length's worth in order to acquire it. So that could have easily been the contrast in the Mishnah. But now you're telling me, because of the question that we posed, that the first case of the Mishnah when it comes to fruit is talking about very large fruit. So very large fruit and flax, they're fundamentally different from one another. What kind of contrast is the Mishnah trying to make when it comes to here's large fruit and then there's flax? That's a strange contrast. So the Gemara says, Shani Pishon Dimishtamet. So the Gemara says, okay, the size is not really the contrast. The contrast is the solid nature of fruit versus the non-solid nature of flax. Meaning, fruit is a solid entity. Therefore, I move a little bit, or if it's lightweight, I pick it up. Meaning, when it comes to fruit, because it's a solid mass, so therefore, any movement, either meshicha or hagbah, creates a kinyan. But when it comes to flax is stringy, and I move a little bit of it, but the other part doesn't move. Therefore, a kinyan can only be enabled when I totally move it from one location to another location. The Gemara says that's the contrast in the Mishnah. Amle Ravina Ravashi Tashma. Behema Gasa Niknes Bimisira. When it comes to a large animal, how do I acquire a large animal? Obviously, I can't pick it up. Even moving it's going to be challenging, so therefore, Mesira, handing over the rein from one person to another person. V'adaka behagba, div Rabbi Meir, v'Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, and now a small animal, how do I do kinyan? Hagba, I lift it up. So that's how I create a kinyan on a small animal. And the Chachamim say no. When it comes to a small animal, you do Meshicha. Now, v'ha behemadaka debar hagbahu, or he, v'ketani dekani b'meshicha. So the Gemara says, now let's think this through. And a small animal easily could pick up. Talking about small goats, small sheep. So you can easily pick them up. And we have a machlokus in the Mishnah, and the Chachamim, which is obviously the majority position, tells us that the way to acquire them is Meshicha. Now again, go back to the rule that we learned on Amud Aleph. The rule that we learned together is that when it comes to something that you can pick up, the only way of kinyan is when you pick it up, to the exclusion of Meshicha. And yet the Chachamim say, when it comes to a small animal that you could easily pick up, yet the means of kinyan is through Meshicha. So that seems to offend the rule of the Amoraim of the Amud Aleph. So Shani Behema Desarcha, so the Gemara says, nah, the assumption is wrong. Meaning we assume that an animal you could just simply pick up off the ground. It's not true. The animal is Sorech. Now, Sorech literally means slippery. The Rashbam over here doesn't exactly explain it that way. The Rashbam over here says, Mistareches umit dapekes biragleha bikarka. Says the Rashbam that what the animal is going to do is as you try to pick it up, it's going to take its feet, basically plant it into the ground, and make it very difficult to pick up. So therefore pulling is going to be the mechanism, the means of acquisition. Okay, Atkan. So that takes us to the end of that sugya. So again, the Amoraim on Amud Aleph say that if something's lightweight and you can easily pick it up, so the only means of acquisition is hagbah. A number of Mishnayos and Braises seem to violate that rule of the Amoraim, and the Gemara defends the Amoraim. Okay, end of that sugya, new sugya. Rav Shmuel Damer Tarvayu. Rav and Shmuel both make the following statement, which is Korbish Lo Shemani Mochalach. So let's say we agree to a volume and we agree to a price. I'm going to sell you a core. A core is 30 sa'a. Okay, it's a significant amount. It's a very large unit of measurement. And over here, we're talking about now the transaction of product. It's a food. And I'm going to sell you a core, and I'm going to sell it to you for 30 shkalim. Okay, so that is now the total amount and the total price. So we are now discussing large units of both measurement and money. So now we're in the course of measuring the core. And we're measuring, and we're now at the 29th core. Sorry. We're at the 29th sa'a. I mean 29 of 30. But I didn't finish the measurement. And now me, the seller, says, you know what? I'm backing out of the deal. Whatever reason, doesn't matter. I'm backing out of the deal. So Rav and Shmuel both say you could do that. Meaning because the deal is structured where it's going to be one core for 30 shkalim, so therefore until it is all measured out, the transaction has not yet been finalized. I suppose, I mean, I don't know if payment was rendered yet or not. There may be a question of reneging on your word. There's the klala, the curse that we learned back in Bar Mitzvah, Misha Parah. Maybe that's in force. I'm not saying it is. I'm throwing it out as a suggestion. But certainly from a very, very technical standpoint, the sale has not been finalized, and therefore you are allowed to back out from the sale at that point in time. However, kor b'shloshim, if let's say we made the following transaction and negotiated the deal as follows. I'm going to sell you a kor for shloshim. Now again, a kor is made up of 30 sa'a for 30 shkalim. Sa'a b'sa'a. But then what we do is, after giving the two large numbers, both in terms of the volume, in terms of the price, we then break it down. In other words, a kor for 30, which is each sa'a is going to be for one shekel, which is exactly how it breaks down into smaller units. So sa'a b'sa'a nimochalach rishon rishon kana. So now every sa'a that's measured out now is its own separate unit, and therefore for each sa'a that's measured out, that's a kinyan in each. And every saw that's measured out, and obviously
one side at a time to set to buy.
Yeah, in other words, right? And yes, and the obvious difference between the two cases is that in the first case we only spoke in the larger unit, and so therefore sale's not going to be finalized until we arrive at that larger unit. And as opposed to the second case where we individualized each one, so therefore each transaction is going to be for each unit that was individualized. Okay, Tashma. So the Gemara says, after quoting this statement of Rav and Shmuel, like the theme of the day, by the way, this is still yesterday's daf, but the theme of the day are things that are said by Rav and Shmuel. So here are more things that are said in terms of transactions from Rav and Shmuel, a large unit versus individualizing and breaking it down into its smaller units. Fine. Tashma, the Gemara says, okay, well, let's consider the following. We go back to a brisa that we said back on page. Pehei Amud Aleph. And that is, whose measuring cup are we using? Are we using the mochers or are we using the lokeachs? So, whoever it belongs to, so that is who owns the item. Ve'af agav delonis male mida. So the Gemara says, now, presumably that means that even before the measuring cup was filled up, still a kinyan was going to be done even before the measuring cup is filled up. So the Gemara assumes this to be a question against Rav and Shmuel, because if the measuring cup is not filled up, so we have not gotten to any measuring unit, and once, according to Rav and Shmuel, any point before that time, there is an opportunity for the seller to renege on the deal. So the Gemara says, "Kagon da'amalei hin b'shnemasar salaim lug b'sela." So the Gemara says, "Okay, but again, we don't know how that case, how that transaction was structured." And the Gemara suggests, as a very reasonable way to present the transaction, is that it was said that I want to sell you a hin for 12 salaim, which is log b'sela. Now hin comes out to 12 log, so that means that if it's a hin for 12 salaim, it means that's going to be log b'sela, that every log is going to be commensurate to a sela. So the Gemara says, if that is how the deal is transacted, ani mochalach uchedam Rav Kahana shnasus hayu behin hachinam shnasus hayu b'midos. And the Gemara adds another point as well. Even though this happens to be a very large measuring cup, but let's even say that it's a measuring cup of a hin, but also like our measuring cups to this very day, so there are markers in the measuring cup that tell you when you get to the first of the 12 sa'a in the hin, and the second, I'm sorry, the first of the log of the hin, and the second and the third, all the way up to the 12th. So in other words, there are markers in the measuring cup. So therefore, if the transaction was structured where I said I would like to buy a hin for 12 salaim, and then log for every sala, and the measuring cup also has markers going inside of it, so I know when I hit 1, 2, 3, 4, all the way up to 12, so the Gemara says, so fine. So now it is exactly parallel to the case case that we just outlined, and therefore for every log that's measured out, that finalizes the sale for that log. So again, it's not going to be a question on Rav and Shmuel. Tashma. The Gemara says, well, let's do it this way. Hasochus apolasos him olagorin. Hayom bedinar ulagorin yafeh sela. Also lehanos mimenu. Okay, we are talking about the hiring of a worker. Hiring of a worker, and we're going to make a distinction in this brisa between paying him now versus paying him after the work is completed. Now, whenever you front money, generally speaking, we'll talk about the halach in just a moment. Now we're just talking about simple business. So if you're fronting the money, so basically you understand that I'm giving you the money now based on the job that you will do. I don't know what kind of job you're going to do. And also I'm parting with the money earlier than I need to. So you know what? Let's work with a discount. Again, we'll get to the halach in just a moment, but that's understood that when you put up the money up front, so you get to do so at a discount, as opposed to if I get to pay you at the conclusion of the work, so then I'll pay you quote unquote full wages. Okay, now let's talk about the halacha. That is the way the business is, or I should say the manager is setting up the job. Take a look at the bottom Rashbam on Pevav Amud Beis. Hasochr Sapol. Venoslan Skara Akshav Benisan Kedelasos Imo Begorin. Look, I want you to work for me in the granary. It's right now the month of Nisan, which, by the way, it is. We're still in the month of Nisan. And I'm gonna pay you now for the work you're gonna do later on. Meaning when it comes time to work in the granary. Hayom Bedinar, Klomer. Next Rashbam. Kol yom shel yomos hagorin bedinar. V'nasan lo achshav la medinar l'lamed yom hagorin. V'lo garsinim ha yom medinar b'perish rabbeinu chanana. And here's the story. I know the job is going to take 30 days. And I'm going to pay you a dinar for every day that you work. And we are negotiating that you're going to be working 30 days for me. And I'll pay you right now. And I'm paying you right now, and I'm going to be paying you a dinar per day, meaning 30 dinarim as of right now. However, ulagorin yafeh. However, if we contract that you're going to work for me, and you wait until you actually work, and then I pay you, ula gorin yafe. Next Rashbam, top of Pezayin Amud Aleph, shescharo sela b'chol yom shebesela hayayachol haskir atzmo aval b'shvak damas amalos ozo gabei. Meaning, generally speaking, had he waited until the actual job, he could have easily hired himself off for one sela, but because the employee was desperate for money, so basically he allowed himself to take a hit on the wages so that he could get the front of the money. So
that.
Huh? No. There's no ona, but what there is ribbis. So the Gemara says,
there's no money being lent.
Excellent. So just stay with me for just a little bit. We're gonna go over that point. So you cannot benefit from that. Says the Rashbam, second Rashbam on the Amud. Mishum demechze ki agar natolei. It looks like ribbis, meaning this is one of those occasions where it's not actual ribbis, meaning, as Ben pointed out correctly, in other words, ribbis is when I get money and then I pay back the money at a later point in time with additional, so therefore I am compensating the lender with both the loan and an addition. That's ribbis. Over here, however, there is no transfer of money from one party to the other party at the front end. It's just simply a discounting, but still, the idea is that for time, I am providing additional money. Or in here, it's working really the opposite. Because you're taking my money now, so therefore I'm paying you at a discount. The Rashbam writes, Mishum demechze ki agar natali. Shenosin lo apol sela biyamos agorin. Bishvil dinar shenosin lo benisan. V'tamtim lo ad achshav. It's as if I'm basically saying to the worker, look, I know that had we waited till Nisan, I would have paid you a lot more. I would have paid you a full sela. Now that I'm paying you a dinar. Mechse karibis, it looks like ribis. And so therefore, since it looks like ribis, so the rabbis slapped a rabbinic ban on such a transaction. However, ava, here's where it would be permitted. It would be permitted where you front the money and he works for you immediately. Meaning, that in the first case where it's prohibited, it's where we contracted he's going to work for me at a later point in time. Meaning we're in the month of Nisan, and we're talking about the granary. The granary is coming sometime beginning of summer, midsummer, end of summer. You know I don't know these things. But it's at a later point in time. So there it's prohibited because mechze karibis. But if let's say I have the worker working for me, it's just now a question of either I pay him on the front end of his work or on the back end of his work. So here we relax the rules. The Chachamim do not ban this kind of negotiation. And if he wants to get paid on the front end for less than what he can normally command as payment, that's okay. Why should that be okay? Again, I turn to the Rashbam. And I'm paying him at the front end at a considerable discount for what he would normally command as wages at the back end. You see, right now, he's working immediately after I pay him, after I front him the money. Because really, even though he's working for me 100 days, but really, in terms of wages are concerned, it's one unit. The Rashbam says it's like Yuma Arichta, it's like a long day. He's working for me, be effective immediately. Meaning immediately after we contracted it. So, over here now, in terms of, so there really are two issues going on. One issue is, does it smack of ribbis? So in the case where I front him the money and then there's a delay before he actually starts working, smacks of ribbis. Can't do it. If, however, we discount the wages and he starts working for me effective immediately and I front him the money and then he starts working immediately, so then the Chachamim relax the rules. That doesn't smack a ribbis, and it's just simply, it's paying him for his day of work just on the front end of the day, not on the back end of the day. And even though it's for 100 consecutive days, but the Rashbam writes, we view that as one term of employment. Fine. So that's one issue, which we've explained. We went over. Now in the context of our Gemara, presents a small problem. Why? Because in our Gemara, we had the statement of Rav and Shmuel. Rav and Shmuel says that if you only talk in big units, so then you can always renege at any point where until the big unit has not been measured out. If we, however, we break that down into smaller units, so then at any point in time, any time the small measurement, you've hit a small measurement, that small measurement has been finalized. That was the same as the Rav and Shmuel. The Rashbam now points out over here, so here now is the problem. I'm just backing up a little bit in the Rashbam. Ve'afilo hachi, right in the middle of that long Rashbam, of Avalim Schar Mehayom, ve'afilo hachi ketani mutter. So here now, we basically negotiated, let's say 100 days of employment, and I told him how much I'm paying him for the entirety of the employment, and I'm also telling him how much he's getting per day. So in other words, I give him both a big number, and I break it down as well. V'chayev lahashlim v'kash lahani darmi rishon rishon kana, v'ashar lo kana, v'kevin shezel lo kana amai mutter, ha'kevin diachol lachzer bo, d'chol yom v'yom chashav mechir b'fnei atzma. Once we broke it down into small units, so then we lost the argument. The argument that we were making was, well, he could, in other words, 100 days is considered one large unit. Once, however, I tell him how much he's getting per day, so the truth of the matter is that for every day now, it's a completed day of work. And therefore, havinami aganatole le'inyan yemos hagorin. So then the problem now becomes that then this case really is no different than the previous case. Previously we said that if I front him the money and then there's a delay, so I can't do that because it's smacks of ribbis. Over here, even if he starts working for me immediately, it's 100 days. So since I told him how much I'm paying him per day, so day one is complete, he's got that wages. Day two is complete, he's got that wages. So for any of the later days, it's basically a delay from the time that I hired him. And consequently, it violates the rules of ribbis. Okay. That is what the Gemara is suggesting as a problem. Let's read this now inside of the Gemara. This is the third line down on Pei Zayin Amud Aleph. So if you're going to say like what we're saying, is that when I mentioned both the large unit and the small units, so for every small unit it creates a kinyan, achinami. So that means now that in a situation where I tell him, work for me for the next 100 days, and I'm going to pay you X, which is less than what I would have paid you at the end. I'm going to pay you X, and I'm going to pay you this much per day. So I give him the large number, and I break it down to the small number. So then, for all subsequent days, it should be a violation of mechze karibis. It looks like interest. So the Gemara says, midin l'yom l'gorin yafisela mutter amai v'ha agar nata lehu. And this is exactly the Gemara formulating this question. Shouldn't this be, basically, me paying him up front for a job that he'll do later on? And again, we're calling it later on because once I told him how much I'm paying him for every day's work, so then all the later days are considered delayed from when I actually front him the money. So Rava says, look, over here, and this goes back to Ben's point really, what are we talking about over here? We're talking about wages. We're not talking about a loan. Meaning the entire idea that we are referring to discounted wages as ribis to begin with is a bit of a stretch. The Chachamim do in fact make that connection. But it's not the strongest of connections, if you think about it, really. Meaning, ribis is when I front the person money and he pays me back at a later point in time. Over here, I am fronting him money, but he's not paying me back in money. He's paying me back in service. So the truth of the matter is that discounted wages, to begin with, is not really ribis. And the Chachamim said, yes, under certain circumstances, it does look like ribis, and therefore we're going to ban it. But really, the circumstances have to be extraordinarily limited. Like, I'll pay you now in Nisan for a job that you're going to do at the end of the summer. Under those circumstances, it looks enough like ribis where the Chachamim say, you know what, we don't want that kind of behavior. It looks like ribis. But over here, you know what, if he started working for you immediately, yes, it's true for every day that he works. Since you mentioned the per day wage that he's going to receive, yes, it's true. Technically, he's obtained that wage. He's earned that wage. That's true. But already to begin with, the connection between wages and interest to begin with is a tenuous connection. So basically what the Gemara says is, we're not going to slap a rabbinic ban under such a circumstance. Maishna reisha maishna seifa reisha de lo kavet ba'adei mehashta mechzik agonata li. Seifa de kavet ba'adei mehashta lo mechzik agonata li. And the Gemara just simply spells it out. Look, in the case where I pay him now in Nisan, for a job that he's going to do months from now, it looks like ribis. Again, it isn't, but it looks enough like ribis where the rabbi slap a ban. If, however, I pay him now for a job he's going to do and he starts working for me immediately, at that point in time, it really doesn't look enough like ribis where the chachamim are going to slap a ban.
No issue here.
When I am...
I hear...
I mean, the davar shel bala olam is generally on a commodity, but I do hear a question. Okay.
How much time has to go by before you can trigger ribis?
So I don't know. Meaning the Gemara's distinction seems to be where he works for you effective immediately versus where it's some sort of delay. I don't know. Okay. Which he?
It's a liability. I mean,
who has a liability?
The worker has a liability to the person.
Meaning he owes. I understand what you're saying. Meaning effectively he owes.
Consequently, it is liable.
Okay, fine.
If you go from like a strict accounting point of view.
Right. In other words, if he fails to provide service. So then he is obligated to pay.
But the Jewish can back out any time he wants.
Correct. Absolutely correct. Okay.
unsecured loan.
Okay. Good. And that's why the Chachamim do slap a ban. And again, limited in terms of when they do. Okay. Okay. And finally, last line of the Mishnah. Okay. We spent a lot of time on this Mishnah. Last line of the Mishnah. The Mishnah takes us all the way back to Pei Dalet. Pei Dalet Amud Beis. And the Mishnah talks about how to create a kingdom when it comes to fruit, how to create a kingdom when it comes to flax, and then the Mishnah ends off by saying if it was something which is connected to the ground, and talish kol shehu, and you pick up any amount, so then you're kona. And what? And the Gemara's basic reaction to that Mishnah is what? Gemara says, well, how does that work? You pick a little bit off the ground and then you're kona? Like, what is the Mishnah even talking about? So, Amar of Shesha, Tachaba Maiskin, and Amar Le, Lecha Yafa, Lecha Karka, Kol Shehu, Vikani Kol Ma She'alaha. And the Rashbam explains, what exactly does the Gemara mean by this? So, this is now the dialogue where this is what the seller is saying to the buyer. L'cha v'yafa l'cha karka kolshu. Kach kasa b'sfarim yishanim. So first of all, the Rashbam clearly had a question of what the gears of the Gemara was. He likes the way it's written in our Gemara, and then he goes on to explain. Klomer l'cha. Klomer. Lech v'hachzeik b'karka. Liknos pishtan. Hamechuber ba. Meaning, you want to acquire the flax that's currently connected to the ground. Oh. So in other words, the flax is connected to the ground. So you know what that makes the flax right now? Status-wise? Karka. Oh. So you know how to acquire karka? Sure. There are many ways to acquire karka. Shar, kesef, shtar, v'chazaka. So what the last point of the Mishnah is teaching us is that while the flax is still connected to the ground, and you want to make a kinyan on the flax, so because the flax is connected to the ground, so you could use mechanism means of kinyan karka. The Rashbam goes on to explain. So, ha-mechubar ba de karka, nikna b'chazaka. V'chol ha-mechubar la karka, arei k'karka. Anything connected to the ground is considered like karka. V'asa masnisin la-shme'inan, d'cheskas karka, mahan l'pishtan. So therefore, by doing an acquisition to the ground, allows you to acquire the flax. V'af agav. You led me right into the next line of the Rashbam. And even though it's not a sale on the land, and even though you are not doing a Maisa Kinyan on all the flax, that's the second Chiddush of the Mishnah, which is that as long as you're doing a proprietary act on some of the Pishtan, that effectively creates a Kinyan on all the Pishtan. Ukagon to Amarle Hamocher, Lakamina Pishtan, Atzmo Kitsas, Viyit Yafa Akarka, Viyed Nakila Harisha. By you doing an improvement to the land, you are now effectively creating a Kinyan on the flax, and that allows you to acquire on all the other flax. And the Rashbam reminds us of a Gemara that we learned some time ago now, Nun Dalet. Haiman de Zachi Zichya Adaita de Ara Kani. Vachinami, Mlakat Min Hapishtan Kitsas, Viniskav Liknos Akarka, Kani La Liknos Kama Shalaha Kainira Be'inai. The Rashbam says that's what I think is Pshat in the Gemara. So it comes out according to the Rashbam, really, there are two big chidushim over here. One, that the Mishnah, when the Mishnah is talking about picking the flax up off the ground, it's talking about a kinyan on the flax, not on the property. Two is that because the flax is connected to the ground, so therefore it qualifies as real estate, and therefore the way you can acquire it is through the kinyane karka, which is, in this case, a proprietary act. And the proprietary act you're doing, it really is a tremendous chiddush. The proprietary act you're doing is you're making a clearing in the ground, which allows you now to plow the ground, and as a result of that, you get to acquire the flax, which you pulled up off the ground. That's the way the Rashbam explains the Gemara. It's king. The Rashbam calls it kinyan chazaka. It's a proprietary act.
Is that acquiring it? Is just showing it that?
No, he's acquiring it, but the it over here is the flax itself. Okay, it's a chiddush, I think it's a big chiddush. The Tosfos, if you want to see a contrasting viewpoint, lech v'yafa lech v'yafa lecha karka kosher v'kani kol mashallah klamar hachzeik b'karka ayide yipui da'ave ke'ein nal v'geder kosher v'teish she'ula lach lios kechatzrech u'le'inizeh she'nitka ne mashallah. Right, Tosfos is over here, doesn't view it so much as a kinyan chazaka, in that you're doing kinyan chazaka on the flax, but Tosu says over here it's actually a lot simpler. In other words, you're going to temporarily own the property, and then the flax you're going to acquire how? Kinyan chatzer, because since the property now belongs to you, albeit temporarily, right? Tosus uses the word she'ula, it's like borrowed to you, but since you're doing a proprietary act to the land, now making the land temporarily yours, so then you can acquire the flax by kinyan chatzer, through kinyan chatzer. So it's different than the Rashba. Okay. Continuing now in the Mishnah, we're on page 9 Amud Aleph. Let's start the Mishnah. Hamochayam v'shem lechavero v'hukro shehuzlo imashlo nismale samida lamocher mishnas male samida lokech. Okay, you're selling wine, you're selling oil, and price fluctuation. Price goes up, price goes down. Mishnah says, obviously, we want to know exactly, precisely when it belongs to whom, because obviously, if price goes up, Seller would like to retain it. Price goes down, seller would like to get rid of it. So the Mishnah says, until the measurement is filled, it belongs to the mocher. Once the measurement is filled, it belongs to the lokech. Whose measuring cup are we using over here? That's an important point. Stay tuned. We're gonna cover that in the Gemara. The im hayasir sir beinayim. Now, what if there's a middleman? So if there's a middleman, so nishbara chavis nishbara l'sirsur. So if the middleman now, basically he's a just trying to think of another word for a middleman. He's right. That's what we're saying. He's not. So he's whatever. He's a middleman. He's a distributor. Okay, that's. I knew I was trying to think of something. So he's a distributor. So the if it breaks while in the property of the distributor, so then whose liability is that? Distributor, meaning it's currently in his possession, and to Ben's point, he's nobody shliach, meaning he is his own entity. He is a distributor, and as such, he is now going to have to bear any liability if it breaks one in his possession. V'chayiv lahatif lo shalosh tipim. And on top of that, as follows: when you pour, it is necessary, it is required that after the pouring is done, the you have to allow the last three drops to go in, meaning that it's we're talking about viscous liquids, oil and wine, oil being having more viscosity, but we're talking about thick liquids, and therefore you have to allow the time and the patience for the last three drops to go in. Hirchinu umitzes harehi shemocher. Now, after you poured, and then you tilt back your jug, meaning you the seller, so whatever content is left in the jug belongs to you the seller, not to the buyer. Why would you have thought otherwise? Stay tuned, we're going to be discussing that. Okay. Now when it comes to the chenvani, so to the store owner, so he is really busy. There is a lot going on at the time. So for him now to sit and wait for those last three drops to go in is going to, for him, represent a loss. There's a lot of people in the store right now. So the Chachamim said that if I'm a balabayis selling oil, and I don't have this kind of pressure of time, so therefore the expectation is that you're supposed to pour and allow for the last three drops to go in. However, when it comes to a chenvani, he does not have that. He does not have the necessity. And Rav Yehuda says that on Erev Shabbos you're going to be exempt. Who is going to be exempt? So stay tuned. The Gemara is going to be discussing who Rav Yehuda is providing an exemption for on behalf of. Okay, Hamida Daman. Okay, let's go to the first case of the Mishnah. In the first case of the Mishnah, we talked about the price of the oil right now in the middle of a price fluctuation. It's either going up or it's going down, and we want to know now who gets to enjoy or lose under such circumstances. So the Mishnah says it's not a question of fighting on behalf of the mocher, fighting on behalf of the lokeach. It's just a function of, was the product finally measured? If the measurement was filled, so then it belongs to the lokeach. If the measurement was not filled, so product still belongs to the seller. Very simple. To which the Gemara says, whose measuring cup are we using? So if we're talking about it's the measuring cup of the buyer, Ashilon is Males, Midalamocher, Midalokechi. So the Gemara says, well, it then belongs to the buyer. So the Gemara says, well, okay, so maybe it's the measuring cup of the seller. So Mishnah is Males Midalokeach, Midalamocherhi. The Gemara says, okay, if it's the measuring cup of the seller, so then it still belongs to him. So Amar Rav Elai b'midas yisur. So the Gemara says, well, Rav Elai says, well, it's neither. It's neither the measuring cup of the buyer, it's neither the measuring cup of the seller, but rather of a middleman. To which the Gemara says, that's an unreasonable explanation of the Mishnah. Why? Because that's the very next case of the Mishnah. So didn't the second case in the Mishnah deal with the middleman? So that means that the first case of the Mishnah is there is no middleman. So it's hard to say that the measuring cup in the first case of the Mishnah is a third-party measuring cup. So the Gemara says it's not so crazy to say it. Reisha mida below sirser, seifa b'sirser atzmo. So the Gemara says, no, it's not so crazy. Meaning that in the first case of the Mishnah, we are talking about a third-party measuring cup. Didn't belong to the buyer, didn't belong to the seller. And what's the distinction between the first case of the Mishnah and the second case of the Mishnah? Very simple. In the first case of the Mishnah, there's no middleman per se, but we borrowed somebody else's cup. So in other words, it's a third-party measuring cup. So under those circumstances, when is the sale finalized? So before the measurement is finished, still belongs to the mocher. Once we've arrived at the measuring point, now it belongs to the lokeach. Very good. Now we move on to the second case of the Mishnah. What do we introduce in the second case of the Mishnah? Not just a third-party measuring cup, but the third-party measuring man, meaning a distributor. We're actually introducing a third-party, a distributor. Okay. Hirchino mitzvah harei shomocher. Now, after having poured into the measuring cup, now the seller takes his own cup, tilts it back, there's a little bit on the bottom, and it belongs to him. To which the Gemara says, Ki salak Rabbi Elai, ashkeche leziri. Rabbi Elai went up to Eretz Yisrael. Sorry, Rabbi Elazar. Okay. Rabbi Elazar went up to Eretz Yisrael, and he finds Ziri. Amarle mi kan tana de asne rav midos. So he asked the following question. Is there someone here in Eretz Yisrael that that knows Mishnayos and Braisos really well and understands Mishnayos and Braisos as it relates to measuring, to measurements? Basically, I need an expert here, not only in measuring, but also in Mishnayos and Braisos. Achve Rav Yitzchak Bar Avdimi. So they pointed to a particular Amor in Eretz Yisrael who was proficient. And Amalei Maika Kashilach. So he says, okay, which Mishnah and Shas do you have problems with? So, I mean, we're talking about real Bikias. So did not. So he says, I'll tell you which one, and that is the following Mishnah. Here Chinu Mitzvah Harei Shomocher. Our Mishnah over here, our Mishnah tells us that after the seller pours the whatever he's selling, oil, wine, he pours it into the measuring cup, and he tilts back his own kli. So whatever's left inside belongs to him, belongs to the mocher. Vehatzanan. And on that, we're going to contrast that to a Mishnah in Trumos. Mishnah in Trumos teaches us, Hechino umitza reze truma. The Mishnah in Trumos describes a scenario in which you are setting aside truma. Truma is 2 out of 100. That's the average amount that you give towards truma gedola. So you are now pouring the, you're pouring to measure the truma. So the and you tilt back, in other words, and you're pouring the first two sa'ah, but you tilt your own kli back, and some of it goes back into your kli. Well, goes back into your kli has the status of truma. Hirchina umitza areza truma. So, what do we see? What basically seems to be a disagreement between the Mishnayos of basically the little bit that didn't make it into the measuring cup. In our Mishnah here in Bava Basra, in the fifth parak, we're saying it belongs to the seller. Meanwhile, in the Mishnayos in Truma, we're saying that that little bit that got pulled back into is still Truma, and in fact belongs to the Kohen. Amar Leha, Idmar La, Amar Rabbi Abba, Mishum Yesh Balim Naguba. So he says, well, we'll make the following distinction. It's not really even a distinction. Look, when I pull back, and it's true that that little bit that should have gone into the measuring cup, but because it was such a thick liquid, ends up sticking to my kli, and goes back into, and comes back as I tilt back my kli. Fundamentally, who does it really belong to? It really belongs to the buyer. And in the case of Truma, it really belongs to the Kohen. And so therefore, the Mishnah in Truma tells us that really it's Truma. Okay. But when we're talking about buying and selling, so we understand that from the buyer's standpoint, he's going to forgive it. Now, the Gemara doesn't use exactly the term forgiveness. The Gemara uses the term Yeish. Meaning, we understand that the buyer is not going to claim that little bit that stuck to the kli of the seller. I mean, the Gemara uses the word yeyush. So,
yeyush means like he kind of felt like he owned it and then he gave up.
That's basically what the Gemara is saying. The Gemara is saying is that he owns that little bit, and then he's miyayish. And it's funny, the Rashi actually...
But then he sees the guy who's taking it.
I know. Like well, that may explain the Rashi, because the Rashi actually uses two verbs. The Rashi, look at the top Rashi on this Amud, Shalakech mit ya'esh umafkir oso. So it could be that's why the Rashi uses both terms. So, mitzu imineshe torach lo lahamtim ashi's matzah. Because, in other words, eventually, it's going to run off. And eventually it'll go in, but it's an assumed forgiveness that occurs in transaction. When it comes to truma, you can't use such language. Truma, it has kedusha; it belongs to the kohen. So the Gemara says. I think that's why the Rashi also uses the words mafkir, meaning it's more of a designed. I'm giving it to you. Understood. I totally understood. Finally, let's just finish up. And Chanvani enochayv lahatev v'chulei ibaylehu. We are looking at Rav Yehuda's exemption, right? In other words, those last three drops. So the Tanakhama says that the Chanvani does not have to allow for those last three drops to go in because he's got so much going on. And on Erev Shabbos, and then the Mishnah says, Rabbi Yehuda then gives an exemption on Erev Shabbos. Gives an exemption to whom? So, the Gemara says, Rabbi Yehuda, Aresha Kailu, Kula, Odoma, Sefer Kailu, Chumra. Is Rabbi Yehuda going on the first part of the Mishnah, meaning not the Chanvani, but just a regular person, on Erev Shabbos, does not have to wait for the last three drops to go in? Or maybe no. Maybe Rabbi Yehuda was going on the Chanvani. And Rabbi Yehuda is saying, you know, Mr. Chanvani, I know you're really busy, but you have to wait and allow those last three drops to go in, and the only time I'm going to give you a pass is on Erev Shabbos. So what's the proper way to understand Rabbi Yehuda? Tashma, the Gemara, here's going to quote a Braisa, and the Braisa says it very clearly, Ditanya. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Erev Shabbos im chashecha Chanvani pater b'mnesha Chanvani tarot. So on Erev Shabbos, the Chanvani is going to be exempt, which means that the fault, according to Rav Yehuda, is that even the Chanvani, even the store owner, who's got many customers and he's got much to deal with. But still, on a regular occasion, meaning non-Erev Shabbos, the Chenvani has to allow for the last three drops to go in, even though that's time consuming, even though it may take some business away from him, but still, it's those last three drops have to go in, according to Rav Yehuda, even for the Chenvani. Tanakhama disagrees. Presumably, we go like the Tanakhama, not like Rav Yehuda.